Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. This is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Well, today I'm interviewing Jessica Nones, hopefully I pronounced that right, the director of Calloused Hands, and I think I have him on the line calling all the way from England. Okay,
yeah,
let's see. Jesse, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Pronunciation as well.
I'm sorry?
It was a good pronunciation as well, so thank you.
Oh, good. Great. Well, now you come from a variety of cultures, and your film, Calloused Hands, deals with culture and also deals with personal events in your life. Can you tell me a little bit about the film and about how it was to make a film that is based on your life?
Yeah, so my dad is Cuban. He was he's actually a refugee back in the late 70s, and my mom is an Irish Jew, and they both met in Miami, like in 79 or something, and I was born and raised in Miami, Florida, and then I went to London when I was 19. I'm 31 now, and the story was just something that kind of, I was working on it way back. I was actually a student in Broward Community College for about a couple semesters, and I started working on it as just a story, you know, and it kind of became a book, but nothing ever really, you know, happened with it. But I was working on that for about 5 years, and then as I started moving into film, I saw a small part of that story that I thought could make a film, and so about 3 years ago I started working on it as a screenplay, and just sort of took it from there, you know, and it would spend about 2 years in development, and then we shot it this past September, October, around there.
Okay.
So sort of, in a way, it was like 11 years in the works.
Wow.
It took quite a long time to kind of let all the, you know, emotions and everything kind of settle, and also I think it took, you know, time for me to mature as a writer and a filmmaker to be in a place where I was prepared to tell the story, you know.
Yeah, and for those who haven't seen it or don't know about it, can you tell us a little bit about the plot?
Yeah, so it takes place over the course of about 6 months and one summer in Miami, and it's about this young boy named Josh, who's 12 and who's mixed race, and he has this stepfather named Bird, who's African American, and they have a really tight relationship where Bird wants Josh to be this baseball star, like the next Alex Rodriguez, and Bird puts a lot of pressure on him to he practices with him endlessly and pushes him, and you know he's dating the boy's mother, whose name is Debbie, and she's Jewish, and so there's sort of this thing of pushing for this dream, you know, and Bird takes the boy to Star Island to look at the mansions and really projects this idea of what it is to be a successful person. But the other thing is that Bird also is an alcoholic, and he's a crack addict, and he's quite abusive. And he puts the kid through a lot of difficulty, and the mother. So the mother, well into the story, reaches this point where she needs help. So she goes to her father, Solomon, for help, who she hasn't seen in a couple years. And the grandfather, Solomon, says, "I'll help under one condition, and that's that my grandson, Josh, has a bar mitzvah." So it then becomes the story of this boy having to prepare for his bar mitzvah, and in doing so kind of discovers a new path in life and sort of leaves Bird, in a way, behind. And it's sort of a coming-of-age story for the boy, but also for Bird and for the mother. So everyone kind of grows in it. And we're still in post production on it, so it's not actually finished yet, and it should be released in 2013, early part of next year.
Okay. Do you already have distribution plans for it, or are you going to go the festival route?
Yeah, we have a couple. We definitely want to screen it in Florida, and we have a couple festivals out in Europe. Because I'm based in Europe, I want to screen it out here as well. So it would be amazing to have a premiere both in Florida and in Europe, kind of simultaneously, and we're talking to a couple of distributors that are interested, so we're just trying to make it now really nice and pretty, get all the final touches on it, and then we'll put it out there.
Now, your scripts seem to get a lot of attention whatever you put out. What do you think makes your screenplays so powerful?
I think part of it was just it was really written from the heart, and it was a story that I think a lot of people could relate to. And just sort of one of those stories that kind of came from the gut, you know. That's why it probably took me so long to write. It wasn't that kind of thing that, you know, I banged it out in a month. It took me a long time to really, you know, I think for me, I had to, like, be in a stage where I was, you know, I had to be a father, and I had to go through a lot of life to be in a position to write it. So I think when, you know, and maybe just sort of it's a story that really connects people, you know, and it did. It got shortlisted by Sundance, and then it was developed out here in the BBC writers' room, and it got in a couple labs sponsored by HBO. And I think for all those reasons, it was just people kind of connecting with the story that was very human and very, very real. You know, everyone understands about kind of finding a path and kind of being pushed off your path and then trying to find it again. So I think that's the thing that maybe people connected with, you know.
Do you think it's important for a story to have that kind of connection with the audience, or are there other elements that also need to be in the story besides that?
For me, as a writer, I definitely, the stuff that I am interested in has to have heart, you know, it has to have, you know, something in it that makes you, that moves you. But I do think there are other elements that make a successful screenplay, you know, the structure and dialogue and you know, it does have to have, there are technical things that you have to understand as well. I think, you know, acts and you know, structure and little things like, you know, the exposition or whatever that you know, so that when people who are used to reading screenplays, read your screenplay, they will see, well, this guy knows what he's talking about. In addition to the heart, he actually is technical with it. So that's probably what took some time, too, to just sort of understand the technique behind it. So it wasn't just spilling out heart and emotions and everything, but there was actually a purpose for, behind the whole thing, you know?
Do you think that the structure as far as, like, you know, what's capitalized and what's tabbed over and that type of thing, just that basic structure, do you think that that's really essential, or do you think that, you know, you can play with that a little bit as long as the story, the content is there?
I think, like now they have these softwares that make it so easy, like, you know, Movie Magic and Final Draft, that you can almost plug your script into it, and it almost does it for you, and I prefer that. I mean, when I do a draft of a script the first time I do it, I don't worry about any of that stuff, because I would get lost in terms of just emotionally trying to find a story if I was thinking about, here's where the slug line goes, or here's where I should cap, or this many spaces in, you know, this is where the dialogue goes. And with the movie, like I do it on Movie Magic, and it just sort of lays it all out there for you, so that I could just, because I like to just flow with it, you know, and I wouldn't be able to flow if I was thinking about all those little things, you know.
But I do think that people are
so used to reading it, they when they read it, they want to see all that stuff there just to know that it's that little bit of reassurance that you know what you're doing, you know?
Is there any other advice you'd give to a screenwriter that's just starting out?
It's just my own belief. I feel that, like, learning, you know, screenwriting classes and everything are great. And I've gone to plenty, and I've done lots of labs, and I'm a really big fan of labs. But at the same time, I think sometimes your kind of original voice, your style, or whatever you want to call it, can sometimes get a little watered down and diluted by that kind of thing. If you're going, if you're too prescriptive and you're following too much of a formula, like, there are a lot of labs and screenwriting books that say, you know, by page 10 this should happen, by page 30 this should happen, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm very aware of all that stuff. But I think when you write and you follow that too much, you maybe can produce a good script, but it's nothing special about it, because it's like any other script that's out there. Whereas, like, you know, some of my favorite filmmakers, they break lots of rules, and I think that sometimes, I mean, you got to know the rules, but to break them is what makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Tell me about this production. Where were all your locations, and how long did it take you to make the film? I know you're still in post-production, but, like, the production itself.
Yeah, most of the locations were in and around Miami. A lot of places that I grew up, you know, it was like Little League fields, and it was a Little League field that I grew up in. We used a synagogue that I actually had my bar mitzvah in.
Wow.
And that was really special. And
yeah.
We shot at my dad's house. I mean, it was a real, many ways, it felt like a real family affair, you know. And there was a couple locations in Hollywood as well. that were like north, just a couple like offices and stuff. But for the most part, it was in and around Miami, especially North Miami, which is where I'm from. And the team was made mostly up of mostly Miami crew, and then there were a couple of crew that came in from London, and then a couple from like two from New York. So it was a real interesting,
wow.
Diverse team, and I think that it was really cool, you know, because everyone had their little quirks and personality traits, and that was all kind of a mix of everything, which is sort of, I guess, for me, having been from Miami but lived in London, I thought it was really nice to kind of put everything in just one big pot and stir it up, you know?
Yeah.
And it was an 18-day shoot, so it was really quick.
Wow.
It was intense.
Now, how did you do your casting?
Casting? It's interesting. I we have Andre Royo, who maybe some people know, who played Bubbles on The Wire. And he was our lead, and he was, we found him through a friend of a friend that, you know, just hit him up on Twitter, really. And he, you know, said, listen, man, I got this friend, he's got a script, would you like to read it? And he said, yeah, why not? He read it, and then he liked it. So I went out to L.A. to meet him and just sort of took it from there. And then for Daisy Haggard, who's our main female lead, that was through our main casting director, Gemma Lloyd, who's out here based in London, and she's fantastic. And then the boy we found through, because I had a stage reading in L.A. a year ago, and we picked him out of a bunch of kids for the reading, and he was just fantastic and really stayed with me. So when we started looking to cast the movie, you know, I couldn't get him out of my head. And then a lot of the other cast in Miami, we got through our very talented Florida casting director, Giselle LaGarrett, who what I love most about it is that, you know, the actors are, you know, I really, because it's sort of got a little bit of a documentary feel to it aesthetically, that the actors are all like just, you know, even the little small parts where they have two lines, they still just look really real, and they look like real people, you know, not like real pretty faces and nothing. I mean, not that they're not attractive, but they look like real authentic people, you know?
Now, actors often want to change a line or two in your script. How do you feel about that as a writer? Do you let them do that and kind of be part of the process, or do you,
yeah,
you like that?
I mean, not if it's a bad line, but if it's, if it's, I guess sometimes it might be, but no, I mean, actually, there's a lot of improvisation in this. You know, I think, like, it's like it's kind of how it goes about. Like, if the actor knows his character really well and he knows the story really well, and he knows kind of the situation and the context, then if he wants to sort of deviate and just give that, you know, give the scene a bit more fluidity, that's great. And we lucked out in that all of our actors were fantastic at improvisation. And I'm really big into improv anyway. You know, I think that you know, if you can, you know, to let them get that space and that creative freedom to just do their thing adds so much more to the script. Anybody that's read the script and then sees the film, they're going to see lots of improv all over. And it's just those guys adding another layer of color and humor and pathos to it. So, yeah, I'm really big into that.
What do you think is the most important thing for a director to do when dealing with actors on the set to keep them happy and, you know, not restless? What do you think
I'm sure, you know, there's lots of time where they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, because it was really interesting, there was, so with, especially with our leads, they all, what I picked up on after a couple of days was that everyone had this sort of really, you know, a different way of wanting to work or a different process, you know, and some of them preferred to, you know, rehearse their lines a lot and really be, you know, really be sharp on their lines. And then others didn't really want to rehearse that much, and they just wanted to kind of find the moment and find that little groove in the moment and go for it. And I think it was just about being sensitive, and, you know, to that. And I mean, a couple of them, you know, some of them like music, so, you know, some, you know, if you, I think it's just being sensitive to what kind of turned the switch on in them, you know, if it was putting on a song that made them feel something, or if it was, you know, sitting with them and rehearsing lines a few times over and over to get them comfortable, or if it was just to give them space and let them just kind of do their thing, and then let them just sort of get on set and go for it. I guess that's the thing, is just to be sensitive to, because, you know, these are very sensitive creatures, as am I. So it's, you know, just about being sensitive to what makes them kind of work and operate.
How did you get the budget for this?
Budget was, it's a low budget film, so it's it's an indie, you know, true indie, and I think most of it was private and money raised in the UK.
Yeah. What do you think was the most challenging part about doing this project?
So many challenges. I think I lost hair doing it. It was so stressful. I think just pulling together, you know, it's like the whole thing, the whole crew, the whole cast, you know, it almost feels like, you know, I remember 2 years ago when this was just an idea and a script had just been written. It feels like you got this massive boulder and you got to push it up this mountain and, you know, it's so slow to get it up there, you know, and the first steps especially, it feels like you move it and it goes like about an inch, and it takes a long time before it actually feels like it's moving at all. And that was the thing that I think, just to kind of get everyone on side and get everyone to actually believe that this was going to happen. A lot of people, even after we shot it, they didn't believe it. They were thought I was full of hot air. They were like, you know, this isn't going to happen. Good luck, man. And, you know, I think that part, I mean, and I can understand why, you know, because there's a lot of you know, filmmakers out there that are trying it, and it's so stressful and it's so hard and it's money and, you know, you're dealing with your crew, like say you want a crew of 30 people or whatever and cast and trying to get them all lined up to believe in this thing and believe it's going to happen, all that. And I think it's just kind of rallying. You feel like a cheerleader almost sometimes, you know, and I guess that was the hardest part for me, just to pull everyone together to kind of go for it.
Mm-hmm. If you could do the project again, would there be something that you would change?
I'm sure. It's like hard for me now because I'm still so close to it, and I'm actually in post production on it and just wrapping that up. But I'm sure there's a million things I would change, and I'm sure I will do certain things differently in my next feature film as well, for sure.
Yeah. Do you have something in the works already for the next project?
Yeah, I just got my second feature optioned last week. Actually, it's something that. It's set between Cuba and London, and I've got a TV drama series thing that's just been optioned as well. So I kind of got those two things that are in the works, and we're also in post-production on our first, like, feature-length documentary as well. So we kind of have a small team out here through our production company, Wolf Cub, and so that way we can kind of work on things simultaneously.
Now, is that feature that you were just talking about, is that Shoeshine Girls?
No, that's our documentary. That's the one that's in post-production. The
feature
is called. Shoeshine Girls. Yeah, that's one. That got some support. Sorry.
You got an All Roads Seeds grant for that from the National Geographic, right?
That's
how
right.
How did that work?
Yeah.
How'd you get involved in that?
We just applied for it and they just stepped up and said, you know, they really believed in the project, and they gave us some funding and that allowed us to return to Bolivia and shoot the rest of it. So we were really grateful to them, and we just started post production. We should be finished with that probably around the same time Calistans is finished, to be honest. Like, so the both films will be coming out at the same time.
Now, how did that idea come about? Because that seems something really removed from you. So tell us a little bit about that film.
Gosh, I'm gonna say my mom. I think probably my mom told me about it. Somebody told me about the idea. I'm pretty sure it's her. I think it's her. And it was a newspaper article, and was about these kids in Bolivia that were wearing these masks, and they had to, like, they were, because it's like, in La Paz, it's like 14,000 feet above sea level. And so, but because of the shame and the stigma attached to it, Shining Shoes, they wear these masks, and I just got really struck by the visual, the image of these kids wearing these masks and the reasons behind that. And so, you know, about 2 years ago, myself and my main cinematographer, Fabio Dominguez, who also shot Calistans, we went out there, you know, on our own steam and just sort of went for it and shot for about 2 weeks and shot a little taster. And then we came back and we used that taster, which was like 4 or 5 minutes, as a means to try and raise some more funding to finish the film. So we got a bit of money from Channel 4 out here in the UK, and then also from an organization called the Commonwealth Broadcast Association, and then finally the All Roads Seeds Grant. So it kind of like Calistans, it felt like never ending, trying to get that boulder up the mountain, and eventually some people came on board and allowed, you know, enabled us to finish this film. And it's something that's very close to our hearts, because it's just a really compelling story. And actually, one of the main women that we were filming out there, she passed away shortly after the first trip. Yeah, she was she was just such an amazing person. Her name was Marlene, and she was just so funny and so full of life. Even though she was only 34, 35, but she looked about 60, just because, I mean, how hard her life is out there, you know.
Well, so you've seen a lot of different cultures, so how does that affect you as a filmmaker to be involved in all these cultures and be able to travel the world, and what does that do to you as a storyteller?
I really love different cultures, and I got into a little mode because, you know, my father being Cuban, a couple years ago I got really hooked into Latin America, and I really wanted to tell Latin American stories in particular. So that's part of why I just felt as a document, when I was doing documentary, it would be a vehicle for me to go out there. And so it wouldn't just be a vacation, but it would be to do something, to do work and kind of tap into interesting stories. And so, yeah, we've done stuff in Bolivia, and we've made films we made a film in Colombia and in Lithuania. And I'm very fascinated by the world and telling stories. And a lot of those experiences, even though they were documentary, really fed into Calloused Hands, which is a drama, just because, you know, when you do documentary, you're dealing with extremely low resources and, you know, very short amount of time. And it kind of almost geared me to, you know, I knew I had 18 days, it was like, all right, I'm going in my documentary mode and, you know, really going quick and working with what I have. So that was, it was great training to kind of go into a low budget feature.
And you actually had a film that was shown here at the film festival in Fort Lauderdale that received accolades there called Surviving History, which I haven't seen, but I'm assuming by what I have seen of it it's about Judaism, correct?
That's right, yeah. It's about seven Lithuanian Holocaust survivors, and we made that with our mother because she was doing her name is Siobhan Wolfson, and she was doing like a PhD research into the survivors over there, and we did that with my brother Daniel, and we just felt like it would make a really compelling film. So we went out, we made multiple trips, and just some of those stories are pretty harrowing. The survivors, you know, it just ended up being a 30-minute film. It's actually one of the films I'm most proud of, partly because it was sort of done with family and all of us sort of working together, and just felt like, you know, to kind of capture those moments, because a couple of the people that we interviewed have actually passed away, because you can imagine, from Holocaust survivors, they're quite old now, and just to be able to capture those stories before they're gone was really special. Yeah, and it screened in Fort Lauderdale in Film Festival, which is always really nice for me, because I'm being from Florida. I always, you know, it's kind of extra special when a film is screened where I come from, you know.
Yeah, and it's such, for people that don't know anything about Judaism, it's such an eye-opener, because it's such a kind of mysterious culture that people are sometimes a little afraid of, and they don't understand, like, the tefillin and, all of the traditions that go behind it. They don't understand it, to open their eyes to that is just great.
Yeah. No, I know, and complex time right now in the world, I think, to be Jewish, with everything that's happening in Gaza and everything, and I'm not the most religious person, but I do identify myself as being Jewish. I think, you know, it's one of the, you know, and that's kind of what the film Calloused Hands is about, is my entry into the religion. And because it's funny, even when I went back to the synagogue to talk to the rabbi, you know, about using the synagogue, he was asking me, are you doing the tefillin? Are you praying? And I went back to feeling like a 12-year-old kid. You know, I was like, I'm 31 now. And I was like, yeah, I'm kind of praying and I'm doing kosher. And it was really funny. I still feel like a kid. I still identify with that. I am Jewish, and that's sort of who I am. So I do feel like, you know, so some of the projects that we've done have been about that, and probably it's my own sort of self-discovery or whatever you want to call it that's prompted that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you also have done a couple films that deal with athleticism, like Cage Fighter and Clean and Jerk. Are athletics still important to you in your life, and why did you choose to do those two films?
Cage Fighter was our first ever documentary I did with my brother, and it was just sort of a story that was just fascinating to us. This was back in 2007, and I just loved this. I just was really fascinated by sports. We went and found a fighter and made it over here in London, and since then we're both obsessed with cage fighting, and we both train Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and
wow.
We love it. And actually I would love to make a drama about a cage fighter at some point. I know there's been a couple made in the States, but there's not been anything over here in the UK or Europe, and that's definitely something that's in the pipeline as well. And then Clean and Jerk was just something as well that we just saw. I think for me, it has a compelling character, there's an interesting story. I think sports can be an amazing metaphor for life. There's a lot, it's naturally dramatic. There's winning and losing, and there's all these other highs and lows, and I played sports my whole life. I played baseball up until the age of 18, mm-hmm. and now I train martial arts. So when I'm not doing film or something creative, it tends to be something with sport.
The other thing with athleticism is just getting into that mindset that you have to, especially
yeah.
like Clean and Jerk, to be able to lift that weight and
yeah.
to get your mind ready for that.
It's
a lot of
absolutely.
Discipline.
Absolutely. And I just have so much respect. That girl in particular in Clean and Jerk, she...
Mm-hmm.
A couple years before making that, she lifted the weight up and it broke her wrist. And, I think it's pretty brave to have that happen to you and then still go under the bar. And
wow.
I got so much respect for those kind of people that put their bodies out there, not just their minds, but that really go for it.
And then they keep going at it. They keep going back. That's
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a strength of body and mind.
Yeah. That's the thing. And I think when films can kind of combine the two or capture how both things work, I think that's why some of those, movies like Rocky and even that film, The Warrior, that came out a couple of years ago about the cage fighter, they're so dramatic and they're so tense and there's so many beautiful things that can come out of sport that you don't find in other areas of life, and...
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I think in the future, other films that I do will have the sport element to them.
What would be your advice for a director that's looking to get started? Would you say to start with a short film, a documentary? What direction should they go in?
I think to start, the best way is, I started in theater, and I got,
mm-hmm.
It's sort of like after I finished shooting Calisthenics, I was thinking about all the things I experienced, and I realized that I kind of took a little bit from everything. So it was in terms of theater, I learned a great deal about the whole thing with actors. But then documentary is great for being frugal and resourceful. And even I used to work as a journalist, just about kind of being a reporter and having to dig and snoop and all this stuff
mm-hmm.
online. And I think, in a way, the best advice would be to kind of make films, but I think also to live and experience things. And because I don't think you can be a great storyteller if you don't have stories, And
right.
I think that's an important one is to kind of experience life, If it's don't be afraid to live. And
mm-hmm.
Of course, go make short films and make documentaries. And if you want to do theater, write plays or act even. I did a tiny little bit of acting, and I thought that was actually really useful just to learn how it feels to be on stage and experience that sensation. So I think all those things can go into it, but also just to live. Part of the thing with me going to Bolivia and going to Colombia and all these places was to just experience something new, just
mm-hmm.
to live a little bit. And that was really helpful as well.
And you actually do some teaching, too. You have some workshops. Tell me about that.
To be honest, we haven't done workshops in a while. My brother was more geared towards that, but I don't
uh-huh.
do them as much, especially now that I've kind of put
You're busy, yeah.
all my eggs into the filmmaking basket, so I haven't really done as much of that. I would love to, though, but I just haven't.
But you also, you take on new clients and do projects all the time. If someone wants to hire you for something, how would they contact you? Would they go to your website?
Yeah, best thing is go to our website. Because the thing is, it's like to make a film can take up to 2 years. It's so long. But in between, I definitely want to stay busy and sharpen my directing muscle. And I'm definitely open to, if it's other projects, whether they're short or whatever, promos or series or whatever, I'm definitely open to kind of directing other people's work. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily write for somebody else. I'm kind of more, if I'm writing a screenplay, it tends to be something that I want to direct myself, but I'm definitely open, mm-hmm. as a director, I'm definitely open to doing other things.
Okay,
I think one of the best things about a director is just to stay busy and be directing
a lot.
Yeah,
always. Mm-hmm. Give us your website so people have it.
Yeah, so our website is wolfcub.com, and it's wolfcub.com. And the website for the film is calistansmovie.com.
Okay, and right now you're in London.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to spell that? Go ahead.
What was it? CalousedHandsMovie.com.
Okay, and you're in London right now, but depending on the project, you would be willing to travel.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I kind of want to do, especially between the States and the UK, like, I'm very interested in stories back home still. And, like, a couple of the ones I got in the works are in kind of UK-based, but I'm also very interested mm-hmm. in stories in the States as well, so.
Great. Well, we're about running out of time. Is there any last thing that you want to make sure that you put out there about the film or about you?
Just that. Thanks for the interview, for interest, you know, the interest, and we should have the film. You know, as soon as we know where and when it's going to be premiering, we'll let you know.
Yes, definitely. Let me know, and it'll be up on your website, so people can kind of keep an eye on your website, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I blog and I put all the updates over there. So.
Yeah, you have a whole play-by-play news blog I saw on there that you have everything that you're doing, so that's great.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Jesse, and I know you and I will be in touch, so I'll talk
to you
soon.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we just talked to Jesse Quiñones, and once again, you can always go back and listen to this entire show at any time, because it will be in the on-demand archives along with all the other shows that I have done in the past. And as you said, this film will be coming out next year. I am not going to have a show next week because it is Thanksgiving, so happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I will be in Los Angeles, this is where I'm slated to be anyway, doing the holiday Christmas parade. I will be interviewing people on the red carpet there next Sunday, so I will not have a show next Sunday, but I will return the following Sunday, and I have someone tentatively lined up, but I don't want to announce it quite yet, just in case, but check back. I will be here not next Sunday, but the following Sunday, and that will be once again at 1:00 as usual. Now, if you are a director out there and you would like to be on the show, you can always email me, and feel free to follow up. If I don't get back to you right away, please do follow up. My email is ravenprods, RAVENPRODS, @yahoo.com. And as you see, I talk to directors from all over the world. Jesse just called in from London. It's my second director from England. I think it's the second one. The one before was Ian Vernon, who you can go back and listen to his interview, and hopefully I'm going to have him on again soon because he just did another great film. It looks really good that I think he's still in post-production on, so hopefully I'll be able to talk to him about that project as well. He did Bessel Whorehouse in Rochdale. That's what I talked about last time, and you can go back and listen to that interview in the archives. But guys, thank you for tuning in once again today, and like I said, I'll be back in 2 weeks, and I will be with a fresh new director. So you never know who I will interview here, but do tune in 1:00 on, let's see what day that is. That is December 2nd at 1:00. Okay, thanks, guys, and happy Thanksgiving. Bye.